Agnes Richter lived in Germany in the 19th century. She was a seamstress. When she was in her 40s, for reasons that aren't clear, Agnes was taken against her will and put in a mental institution. At some point during the 25 years she spent there, she took apart the uniform she was required to wear and restitched it into a jacket, embroidered with the story of her life. Mount Holyoke professor Gail Hornstein saw Agnes's jacket at a museum a few years ago.
To me, it conveys the conundrum of madness, an experience that's rich with symbolic meaning, but is often difficult for us to decipher and to understand.
Gail Hornstein has spent years researching, reading, and listening to the stories of people diagnosed with psychiatric disorders. In her new book, Agnes's Jacket, she describes the ways they have tried to tell their stories, starting with Agnes and her elaborately embroidered uniform.
Mental patients have always tried to tell their own stories, to communicate their experience of madness in their own terms. What's been terribly difficult is that they have been thwarted from being able to make such communications in a direct way. Mental patients routinely have every possible form of communication taken away from them. Women especially are often denied pen and paper or notebooks out of a sense that dwelling on their own experience will somehow make them worse. These days, patients are often denied internet access or telephone use in private to be able to describe how they feel. Of course, some people have in fact managed to tell their stories, and that's a lot what I write about. And these are people who either kept notes while they were locked up, they hid them under their beds or behind the radiator or behind the mirror in the ladies' room, they wrote their stories after they got out, or in some instances, they were encouraged by the staff on the ward and they were allowed to keep notes, keep a journal, write letters, in some other way engage in a communicative activity.
Yeah, you refer to many of these writings as protest literature.
Some of them are protest literature, and those are stories where people have felt that, for instance, diagnostic categories like schizophrenia have not done justice to the complexity of their experience. And people have wanted to talk about what their inner experience was actually like. For instance, what is it like to hear voices that other people don't hear? What is it like to have perceptions that are different from those of other people? Some patients are literally protesting against the treatment to which they've been subjected, especially those patients who have been kept in institutions against their will, as still is unfortunately very common. Those patients who have been given shock treatment against their will, which is still unfortunately very common. Other patients, though, have wanted to describe their experience so that other people know more about it, not so much to protest, but to educate, to illuminate their experience. And there are also a minority of patients who have wanted to write about their experience to praise their doctors, to hail the treatments they've been given. These are also important aspects of the first-person madness literature.
Why did your research take you to England?
England is a very interesting case because of the National Health Service. That service is run by people who are interested ultimately in the bottom line. That is, a service that is economical as well as effective. So when patients have come up with methods of treatment of their own, for instance, meeting together in peer support groups, which has been enormously effective, managers in the NHS are likely to say, fantastic. If you can go to a peer support group instead of being prescribed an expensive medication or needing to see a doctor very often, that's great. During the 6 years that I've done research for this book, I've been present at hundreds of support group meetings in the UK, in Europe, in this country, where people, often people who have been in the mental health system for 20 years, who have been in mental hospitals, who have been given every medication, who have been tried in every treatment, who have received shock treatment, and have not responded to those methods, have surprisingly and intriguingly, I think, responded to being in a support group with other people who've had experiences like them and talking about what those experiences mean.
Gail Hornstein is the author of Agnes's Jacket. The peer support groups she has been involved with include the Freedom Center in Northampton.
I agreed not to be an observer, but to be willing to talk about my own experience. People call me an ally, and I think that's the right kind of word to use. I'm not a patient. I'm not a therapist. I'm an ally of the work that they're trying to do.
And Gail Hornstein will tell us more about those peer support meetings tomorrow morning when our conversation continues. In her book, Agnes's Jacket, Mount Holyoke College psychology professor Gail Hornstein tells the story of Agnes Richter. Confined to a German mental hospital in the late 1800s, Richter, a seamstress, took her hospital uniform apart and restitched it into a jacket, then embroidered it with what we believe is her life story. Some of the words are unintelligible. Hornstein uses Richter's effort as one example of a way people who are diagnosed as mentally ill have tried to tell their stories. For 2 years, she sat in on weekly meetings of a Northampton, Massachusetts chapter of a group called the Freedom Center. She says being at those meetings was a revelation.
One of the things I learned as a graduate student in psychology when I was doing my PhD studies is that psychiatrists think that people with psychotic diagnoses like schizophrenia are, I'm going to put this in quotes, incapable of taking the role of the other, that people can't think about the needs of other people because their own experience is so overwhelming to them. And what I found again and again, week after week, going to Freedom Center meetings and the meetings of other support groups in other places, is that people were extraordinarily sensitive to one another's needs, that even people who were in intense distress would talk about their difficulties for a little while, get some support from the group, and then say, let's see who else needs support tonight.
In your book, you tell us about some of the people you meet at the Freedom Center. Alice, for example, she tells the group that men are breaking into her home, she's being tortured and raped, she's afraid to stay in her own house.
Yes, she's absolutely terrified. And even though I and everyone else in the group at that time wondered whether, had we been there, whether we would have seen these men breaking in. In other words, was this something that was literally happening at this moment, or was this something in her experience? Still, there was no question that she was terrified. And what I found so exciting and reassuring about the approach of the group was to deal with someone's feeling in the present and to understand what they needed right then. And what she needed right then was for people to empathize with her terror. And people did a range of kinds of things. They talked to her in the meeting about what she could do to feel less frightened. They volunteered to come over and stay with her, or for her to come and stay in their houses for a few days till she could feel calmer. They made practical suggestions that had a huge effect on enabling her to calm down and then be able to have a more realistic sense of what was actually happening.
And then there's a gentleman named Artie, whose troubles seem to come and go in waves. He functions pretty well for a time, and then he has periods of very strong emotional reactions, lots of anger. This is very different from Alice in that it seems to come and go with him.
Well, this is the pattern that psychiatrists diagnose as bipolar illness. What's so striking to me is how when people are not in such a period of difficulty, they're fine. This is someone, for example, who holds a responsible job and who most people would not be able to tell had any of these difficulties if they met him on most occasions.
At one point, though, he ends up in the psych ward of a hospital. I was struck that he told you that he, as he put it, played the game to get out.
I've heard this story from many, many patients. The staff in the hospital are looking for specific ways of acting and specific things that people will say as an indication that it's time to let them out. So if a person says, I feel fine, I'm not nearly as upset as I was on that night when I came in, and if they are calmer for a couple of days, they're likely to be let out. Now, whether we think that's good or bad is a really complicated question. But these days, most mental patients don't stay in hospitals for a long time. We don't have those kind of institutions anymore. And hospitals aren't usually very supportive environments, and so people often want to get out as soon as they can because whatever positive ways they do have to cope often are not facilitated by hospital staff.
In your book, you do say the potential for full recovery remains strong. So how do we get to a point where people can realize that potential?
That's one of the most important messages that I want to convey. This is what I have learned from patients themselves, that no matter how long someone has been suffering, there is a strong potential for them to completely recover from whatever difficulties they have experienced. This goes for people with severe diagnoses like schizophrenia, bipolar illness, dissociative disorder. Recovery means very different things to different people. And one of the important contributions that the movement of psychiatric patients, the psychiatric survivor movement as it's called, has contributed is helping us to understand that recovery has multiple meanings. For someone, it might mean being able to get a job that's commensurate with their talents. For someone else, it might mean being able to be in a relationship that's important to them. For other people, it might mean being able to be a somewhat unusual person, yet not be identified by the mental health system as a patient. So recovery is really the most important message that's really coming from the patient movement.
Gail Hornstein is the author of Agnes's Jacket, A Psychologist's Search for the Meanings of Madness.